Welcome to the GCSE English Literature Revision Podcast. I'm your tutor, and today we're diving deep into one of the most powerful, darkest, and most rewarding plays you'll ever study, Shakespeare's Macbeth. Whether you're sitting AQA, EdXL, OCR, or any other board, this episode is packed with everything you need to walk into that exam room feeling confident. So grab your notes and let's get started. Macbeth was written around 1606, and it's Shakespeare's shortest tragedy, but don't let that fool you. It is absolutely crammed with ideas about ambition, power, guilt, fate, and the supernatural. And here's the thing examiners love. Every single one of those ideas is connected. You cannot talk about ambition without talking about guilt. You cannot talk about the witches without talking about fate versus free will. The play is a web, and the best candidates, the ones who get into the top levels, show that they understand how those threads connect. So let's start with the big one. Ambition. Macbeth begins as a celebrated warrior. Duncan calls him brave and valiant. He is loyal, honored, respected. But the moment the witches plant the seed of ambition, all hail Macbeth that shalt be king hereafter, something shifts, and this is crucial for your analysis. Shakespeare doesn't show us ambition as a simple, clean desire. He shows us ambition as something that corrupts, that distorts reality, that makes a good man capable of terrible things. The key question examiners want you to explore is, was Macbeth always capable of this, or did the witches and Lady Macbeth create a monster? The best answers don't give a simple yes or no. They explore the tension. They argue that the witches awaken something already present, a vaulting ambition that Macbeth himself acknowledges in Act 1, Scene 7. I have no spur to prick the sides of my intent, but only vaulting ambition, which o'erleaps itself. Notice that word vaulting. It suggests something excessive, something that goes too far, something out of control. That's Shakespeare telling us that Macbeth's ambition is already dangerous before he commits a single crime. Now, guilt. Once Macbeth murders Duncan, guilt becomes the dominant force in his psychology. Shakespeare presents this through some of the most vivid imagery in all of English literature. Immediately after the murder, Macbeth says, "Will all great Neptune's ocean wash this blood clean from my hand? No, this my hand will rather the multitudinous seas incarnadine, making the green one red." That word incarnadine, it means to turn red. Macbeth imagines his guilt spreading outward, staining the entire ocean. This is hyperbole, yes, but it's also a profound psychological insight. Guilt cannot be contained. It spreads. It infects everything. And then there's Lady Macbeth. In Act 5, she echoes this. "Out, damn spot, out, I say." She's sleepwalking, compulsively washing her hands, unable to cleanse herself of the guilt she once dismissed. Remember, in Act 2, she said, "A little water clears us of this deed." The contrast is devastating. Shakespeare uses this structural echo, the same imagery of blood and washing, to show how guilt has destroyed her. She went from cold rationality to complete psychological collapse. That is a character arc worth analyzing in depth. Let's talk about the witches, because this is where so many students go wrong. The most common mistake is treating the witches as straightforward villains who cause everything. Examiners will not reward that. Instead, think about what the witches actually do. They make predictions. They never tell Macbeth to kill Duncan. They never force his hand. What they do is reveal possibilities, and Macbeth chooses to act on them. This connects to one of the play's most important themes, appearance versus reality. The witches' prophecies appear to be promises, but they are actually riddles. None of woman born shall harm Macbeth. That sounds like invincibility. But Macduff was from his mother's womb untimely ripped, a caesarean birth. The prophecy was true, but not in the way Macbeth understood it. Shakespeare is showing us the danger of taking things at face value. This theme runs throughout the play. Duncan says, "There's no art to find the mind's construction in the face. He cannot read people's true intentions." Macbeth and Lady Macbeth are masters of deception. Look like the innocent flower, but be the serpent under it. The serpent imagery here is significant. It echoes the biblical fall, suggesting that their deception is a kind of original sin, a corruption of the natural order. And speaking of natural order, this is your Jacobean context. King James I, who was on the throne when Macbeth was written, was absolutely fascinated by witchcraft. He'd written a book about it called Daemonology. He also believed deeply in the divine right of kings, the idea that a king was appointed by God, and to kill a king was not just a crime, it was a sin against the divine order of the universe. When Macbeth kills Duncan, he isn't just committing murder. He is, in the eyes of a Jacobean audience, tearing apart the fabric of creation itself. That's why the natural world goes haywire. Horses eat each other, the sun disappears. Shakespeare is using pathetic fallacy, the weather and nature reflecting human moral disorder, to show the cosmic scale of Macbeth's crime. Right, let's get practical. Here are the most important things to remember in the exam. First, always analyze language at word level. Don't just identify a metaphor and move on. Ask yourself, why this word? What does it suggest? What does it make the audience feel? Examiners call this zooming in. The difference between a level 3 and a level 4 response is often just this. The level 4 candidate picks a single word and unpacks it fully. Second, integrate your context. Do not write a separate paragraph that says, "In Jacobean times, people believed in witches." That is context bolted on, and it will not earn you AO3 marks. Instead, weave it in. Shakespeare's Jacobean audience, deeply familiar with King James's own writings on witchcraft, would have recognized the witches as genuinely threatening figures, not merely theatrical devices, but real spiritual dangers. Third, consider the play as a performance. Shakespeare wrote this to be watched, not read. Think about staging. When Banquo's ghost appears at the banquet, only Macbeth can see it. The other lords see a man apparently raving at an empty chair. That dramatic irony creates enormous tension. Examiners reward candidates who think about theatrical effect. Fourth, avoid plot summary. Every sentence you write should be analytical. Instead of "Macbeth kills Duncan in Act 2, write "Shakespeare presents Macbeth's murder of Duncan as a moment of psychological fracture, reflected in the fragmented, breathless quality of his soliloquy. Fifth, use the command words. If the question says explore, you need breadth. If it says how does Shakespeare present, you need to focus on methods. If it says starting with this extract, spend roughly equal time on the extract and the wider play. Okay, quick fire recall round. I'll ask a question, pause, then give the answer. Try to say it out loud before I do. Question one. What does Macbeth say immediately after murdering Duncan about washing his hands? Will all great Neptune's ocean wash this blood clean from my hand? Question two, what does Lady Macbeth tell Macbeth to do in Act 1 about his face? Look like the innocent flower, but be the serpent under it. Question three, what is the witch's famous opening line? Fair is foul and foul is fair. Question four, what does Macbeth acknowledge about his own ambition in Act 1, Scene 7? He calls it vaulting ambition, which overleaps itself. Question 5. What does Lady Macbeth say during her sleepwalking scene? Out, damn spot. Out, I say. Let's bring it all together. Macbeth is a play about what happens when ambition overrides conscience. Shakespeare uses the supernatural, blood imagery, darkness, and dramatic irony to trace one man's psychological collapse from honored warrior to isolated tyrant. Lady Macbeth mirrors this journey, beginning as the dominant force and ending in madness. The witches are catalysts, not causes. Context matters. Jacobean beliefs about kingship, witchcraft, and divine order are woven into every scene. In the exam, zoom in on language, integrate context naturally, think about theatrical effect, and always keep your argument focused on the question. The candidates who earn the highest marks are those who write with genuine critical engagement, who have something to say about the text, not just something to report about it. You've got this. Keep revising, keep practicing those quotations, and remember, every word Shakespeare chose was deliberate. Your job is to show the examiner that you understand why. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.